I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Serve Remember Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Serve Remember Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/innerAcademy.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, everyone. Raghu, I'm back. And this is Mind Rolling. And I want to welcome, and I just said to him, this is Makad Brooks. Makad, welcome to the show.
And thank you.
I just said to him, because although we've had a little chat a few days ago, this is all brand new. And I said, yeah, this is one of the advantages of doing podcast for me. I have made so many new friends and gotten to know people from all walks of life. It's just really fantastic. So, and so you'll excuse me too, because I know you're doing a lot of stuff online, like everybody is. And so you have to tell your story over and over, but,
it's okay.
No, God's an actor. So he knows how to do this stuff. Okay.
I try to make it sound fresh every time.
Yes,
I'm not sure if I accomplished that, but yeah.
Yeah. And we have to thank our mutual friend, Mr. Duncan Trussell.
Yes, we do.
And he's my guru. And
you're a smart man. You're a smart man.
Right?
Yeah.
We love him. We really love him. And
sending all the blessings to Duncan. Love him. He's amazing. He's just an incredible guy.
I mean, I play around him, and he always gets pissed when I say, this is my guru, my podcast guru, which is true. He got me turned on to this. And, my earlier days, I was in radio, so it was a natural fit. And he knew my story a little bit, but he it was ABCs too. Okay, you get this piece of equipment and you plug this into it. And it was like that, it wasn't just, oh, go ahead, do it, man.
And now you're teaching me.
Yeah.
Passing. Yeah. It's already started. Boy. It's already begun. Look at you.
So I just looked up little stuff here and there and some of your posts on Instagram, all that. But, one thing really got me about you, and of course I want to hear about your life and how you got to where you are, but His Holiness the Dalai Lama has said over and over and over, the way that we can go forward to the future with positivity and hope, genuine hope, is through the auspices of our mothers. He said, I had a totally compassionate mother, loving and compassionate mother. And, here I am. he kind of said, you know. And I saw a picture of you with your mother, and I just saw, is this one comment on yeah. That seems to be pretty self-evident. I don't know. Talk about it, because it's so beautiful. It's such a reality what he said, is it not?
I never heard that quote before, but I 100% agree with that. Like, my mother is, she has many roles in my life. She's my hero. She's one of my best friends. She's one of the most annoying people I've ever met. but she does it out of love. Like, she, you know, her, all the things that she doesn't want me to do are for my own safety or for my own security or for my own comfort. And, it's become a good rule of thumb. If my mom is telling me to tone it down, I should turn it up. So, yeah, it's, I find a lot of truth in that. And she's the most compassionate, transcendently patient and loving person you ever want to meet. Mm. And she's feisty, very feisty.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. But, it certainly has informed your life in a profound way. I mean, I can tell without even knowing that much about you. Well, just a little bit, you know, growing up and where that was, and just some of the causes and conditions. I usually ask people, okay, what is the turning point where you start to realize there was something beyond, senses, ego, there's something else going on. Ooh. And, you know, so, but what were the causes and conditions just as you were growing up?
I mean, for me, that was a very early realization. I think I realized that around four or five years old, that there was.
That's early.
That I was sort of, I had this omnipotent presence of my own life. And I was able to sort of be out of my body and watch things happen at 4 or 5 years old. And I just thought that was normal. I thought everybody was doing that. And then I started trying to describe it to people, and they're like, what's wrong with you? I was like, you don't see this conversation from another way? Like, they're like, no. I go, so I think that's kind of always been there for me, I guess. I was raised Catholic, still recovering, you know? I can remember a time I was in a closet 6 or 7 years old. I locked myself in a closet, and I had lied to my mom about drinking apple juice. And I thought I'm going to hell. I'm going to hell. Like, the Catholics say if you lie, you're going to hell. I was like, this is just as bad as killing someone. So I was going through this like confessional guilt at my own birthday party, like 6 years old. And I kind of realized, well, this is not for me either, because this is, in that omnipotent perspective, I go, this is too much for a child. I literally said that to myself.
Really?
Yeah.
That's like, pretty too profound much for
yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it's profound, but if it's just kind of where I found myself. Mm. I'm no longer bashful about this, but I remember having these very specific and mundane dreams about, being a woman in the past. And they would be these really, really just mundane sort of everyday dreams. And
I didn't past know incarnations, you mean? Past lives.
Correct.
Like that?
Yeah. I think that's what was happening. Mm. But I that was very early. That was elementary school. And I started to like sort of be really freaked out by those dreams. Mm. And I tried to stop having them. I was talking to others about them and hoping that they could give me some advice about how not to start living somebody else's life in my dreams. Like, especially like, cause going to school and hanging out with friends, it wasn't like you were jumping through a wall and chasing a dragon and then some non sequitur of like, now you're floating in this vat of goo. No, it was just like, go to school, have an argument with your parents. Did I not make a peanut butter sandwich? I'm like, what is this? This is crazy. So I kind of always, I guess, had this, I don't know, this interaction with something other than the senses. Mm. Yeah. And I was able to explore that in my adult life. And, May 20th, 2000, 9 was kind of the culmination of that. I was in the hospital for a long time. I had a parasite, an amoebic antimicrobial parasite that I got in Africa, which is very fancy way of saying a water-based parasite. And I had most people who have that particular type of parasite die within 28 weeks without treatment. And I had it for 2.5 years.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. But I didn't know. I had these. So with Western medicine, what happens is they treat your symptoms.
Yeah.
Right. So I go into the doctor. I have gastrointestinal problems, and they say, okay, well, let's give you this. So everything's fine for 2 months. And then I come back and there's something else going on. And then they gave me something for that. And 2 months later, I come back. So I was always at the doctor for a good 2.5 years, not realizing what it was. And then one day I couldn't get out of bed. Everything, everywhere blood went hurt. To tell you the truth, like my eyelashes hurt, like my hair follicles hurt. Everything it was my teeth, anything, anywhere where blood was going. Because what happened was I had a liver abscess, which is caused, it's a hole in the liver. I won't get too into detail about it because it's kind of gross. But like, what happens is the parasite colony creates a hole in the liver, and the liver balloons around it, thus pushing into the diaphragm. So every time you breathe, it's like someone's stabbing you, and the blood is going through the body. And every time the liver is supposed to be cleaning it, it's not. And that's how the parasite can use your own bloodstream to get into the rest of your organs and take over your body. Somehow that didn't happen to me, which makes me a medical anomaly in the first place. So instead of curing me, what they did was they prolonged my suffering so they could study me in some ways. And I started to figure that out, really, yeah.
In this country? Correct. Were here? Yeah.
I was. I was the third case in 12 years. They hadn't seen anything like this. Since a lot of doctors were coming in, flying in, going, oh my God, I've never seen this in real life. This is like a medical school textbook thing. Wow. And I realized that there was all these doctors coming in and nobody was really helping. And they were just sort of accumulating research. Wow. Western medicine. And so one night, to make the story shorter, but also add to the severity of it, I had another doctor diagnose me with swine flu. I had one diagnose me with leukemia. I had all these different diagnoses, and none of them were right. But I was being treated for so many different things. And I had this IV drug drip coming into my system. And I had they finally found out it was a parasite. And I took a medication for that. And I had an allergic reaction. And that caused my vitals to crash. And I crossed over to the other side.
You had an NDE.
I had an NDE. Wow. And
okay, well, tell us about that. Yeah, this is something Ramdas, we talked about, that this whole network is a Be Here Now network. He, in the latter years of his life, spent a lot of time around that subject, talking to people, and I did as well a little bit. Big time. If you went in the library, where he was reading at his house, he had a ton of books around this. So
I wish I could have talked. Well, you know what? It's not too late. We can do that sometime in the quantum, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess I'll get into it. They say that your life flashes before your eyes, and I know what they mean when they say that, but that's not quite how I would describe it. How I would describe it is, it's like you are on the edge of this orb of existence of your own life. And it's nonlinear, and you're able to see every moment from that omnipotent perspective I told you about when I was like 4 or 5 or 6 years old. That I thought was my imagination. It's like you yourself, 20 years, 25 years down the line, or 30 years down the line, when you're at the end of your life, you're going to see this conversation we're having right now from a completely different perspective. And you're going to be able to jump from conversation or happenstance or your father said this, and this is what he really meant. Oh, wow. And I was 12 right here, and I'm 14 here. And this is last week. And this is 5 minutes ago. And that's 30 years ago. And all these things are happening. And you're connected to all of them, but sort of separated from all of it, right? It's like, it's almost like VR. It's interactive, right? And then they start to fade, and you realize they're going somewhere else. And that is, and you still have your conscious mind. At least I still have my conscious mind. And I was like, where is this going? These are my memories. These are what make me me. That's my imprint. Where could that be going? And as soon as you ask that question, you get a response. And
really?
It's almost like laughter. It's almost like it's going to you. You're uploading. It's going to you. And then there's this, it's like this psychic break almost, where you start to feel like, well, what am I then? What is this body? What is Makad? Like, if that's me, then what is this? And it's like, that's you too. These memories, that you thought were yours go up to your own, I would say your soul's consciousness. Mm. And I don't even know how to explain that. Then what I experienced was all the senses that make the human animal alive, like the sight, the sound, touch, you know, all these things. They become these sacred geometry shapes. They're representative. They become these three dimensional sort of fabrics of honeycombs and mandalas and different things. And you know what they are. You know that's you in this sort of geometrical representation. And then it goes into this spiral really, really fast. And these things are sort of sucked out of you, and they just kind of go away. And with the last conscious thought, at least I asked myself, did I do what I was supposed to do while I was here? And that sounds pretty. It sounds general yet ominous, but it really, really is a simple way of saying, did the soul fulfill the agreement it made with the body before it took the body? Mm. You know, you made an agreement to be here in this space time. So you have consciousness, and with consciousness, you must have purpose. So did you pursue that purpose? Did you fall into inherited agreements, or did you choose to live the life that you chose to live in the first place?
Yeah.
And my answer was no.
Mm.
Not yet. Yeah. And that was the most heartbreaking part of the entire experience. That was almost scarier than the process of crossing over. It's like coming to terms with the truth about my own existential distractions, things that I've distracted myself with, or things that I've agreements that I've inherited because of a spacesuit in this space time, and perpetually pushing that boulder up the hill like Sisyphus, and saying, and never really understanding why I just didn't put the boulder down. Mm. What's the purpose? What's the purpose of pushing the boulder up if it isn't your boulder? Right. And so that happened to me. And I would say that I at that moment, you're kind of still trying to process what's happening. And at least I was. I can only speak from my own experience. So I was still trying to process what was happening. And I was going down to where you find your intestinal fortitude. Right. I was reaching for that. And it was almost as if I had these energetic hands just digging as far as I could go down into my root. And there was the bottom. And there was a bottom. It was way higher than I expected it to be. And there was a very calming voice. It was my own voice saying, not this time. Don't fight. Not this time. And there was something comforting about that. Scary, very scary, but something very comforting. It was almost like, okay, resistance is conflict. Conflict is suffering. What now? And as soon as I sort of let the process of trying to fight for something that was not meant to be at the time, I felt bliss.
Mm.
Complete and utter bliss and laughter and embarrassment that I forgot that I was a soul having a human experience. Like it was a very particular sort of bliss, a mixture of bliss and experiential ecstasy and laughter and a timelessness of knowing and an embarrassing laugh, truly embarrassing laugh. Like you lived your whole life in that tiny little body that you identified with and not the rest of this thing, not the rest of this thing, this energetic body that's always here. That's been here since the source. Come on, man. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of interesting. And like, you know, and once again, like when you're in that space, it's more experiential than it is, thought provoking. this is me processing it, years later. The next step that I noticed at the time was I just thought it was dark but things were lighting up and I was dancing and it was dancing and it was me and I was it. And the laughter was there, was palpable. Like, I mean, it was probably heard through dimensions, right? And then I realized I wasn't in blackness. I was on top of this placid horizon, almost as if you were to turn off your iPad or your iPhone screen, and it's just black, darker than black, like shiny. And you're moving forward. I was moving forward, and I was aware of what you could only call a body, but it wasn't a body. It was, you couldn't see it, but you could feel it, if that makes sense. I was able to see maybe 270 degrees around, like without, there's no head to turn, but like that's kind of what you can see and you can feel. And when I say big, when I say you feel big, I mean a building. You feel like a building. you feel like an oak tree, like bigger. You feel like a redwood. You feel like a, your energy is giant. The being that you are underneath that mask is a giant energy. It's a giant, beautiful energy. Wow. So I felt it was like orb-like. I felt like a pulsating. I felt the movement. And I move forward. And that black, placid landscape was reacting to my movement, like almost like ripples in a pond. And I noticed other orbs, you know, to the sides of me moving as well and pulsating. And I was like, wow, do I look like that? I guess I look like that. You know, it was like being a kid and sort of, you know how a baby looks at everything and is just mesmerized by it and curious by it? Like that's how it felt.
Delight. Kind
of. Delight. Right. And then, the soul's memory came pouring back in, almost like, you know where this is. This is the place you go before the transition. And this is either a short trip right here or this is a long one, depending on, you know, what I got was depending on your choices, depending on the choices you made, right? And it seems to be like a decompressor, like a deprocessing center for souls after a human experience. And what I saw was like this horizon that became a landscape that I remembered. Like a place. It was a place. It wasn't like this sort of imaginary, ephemeral sort of thing. It felt like a physical space and place that we all know. That we all know. Not Makad, not Ragu, but our souls know this place. And I started to see mountains, and I started to see things I think were trees, but they looked a little different, and certain colors in the sky and that horizon. And there was so much harmony coming from that horizon and bliss. And I just wanted to go dance there. The only word I can think of is dance. It's not dance. It's almost like this experiential, like, exchange of ecstasy with nothingness, almost like if you can imagine, like
molecular joy,
right? Like yeah, a molecular ballet. That's kind of, yeah. Honestly, and so to make a long story short, the other orbs that I was experiencing started moving a lot faster than me, and I was slowing down to a stop almost. And I started to feel like, no. I want to go that way. I want to go that way. And it was almost as if I could sense what the other orbs were communicating, and they were just sending joy and love and bliss and harmony. We don't have the words to describe this kind of stuff, man.
Yeah. In all these NDE stories. Yeah. I can say some stuff to you, but it's ineffable. I can't really tell you.
Yeah. It's, the best thing that you can do is three ayahuasca journeys in a row with a powerful shaman. Seriously. And maybe you get a taste of it. So I remember seeing this light that I thought was like the moon on the horizon of this place. And I started floating up towards the moon. And I remember thinking to myself, or like not thinking, but like emanating the communication of no, I want to go there. Like, no, like it was almost like a playful, like, no. Right. There was this voice again that sounded like my voice and has come out of my body a few times since then. More often lately because I've made more room for it. But, it said, there's more to do. There's more to do, or there's more to be done. I forget exactly what it was, but it was the communication of that. And it's hard because we say, oh, there's a voice, but it's not a voice. It's like you're hearing it from the inside almost. Mm-hmm. Like you're hearing perspective of the universe. Like if you're inside the sound, it's you don't hear it, but you know it. Hard, once again, hard to explain. So I'm floating towards that moon, or at least what I think is I'm on a trajectory towards that moon. And I'm thinking, where is this? Where's this come? And then that moon became that spiral of energy again, that three-dimensional representation of sacred geometry of my senses. And I was kind of like, okay, I accept this. But it was almost as if I was, I hesitate to say disappointed because I don't want to say that. Because I'm very grateful to be alive. I'm very grateful to have had all the experiences that I've had, but there's something about the bliss, something about that molecular ballet that nothing in life can compare to. Mm. Nothing. Mm. Absolutely nothing. So it was almost as if I was like, okay, I got to postpone that. Like you see all your friends over there having a good time and at a dinner party, and you're like, oh, I have to go home and write this email real quick. I got to jump on a Zoom. Those shapes spiraled the other direction, came back into me. I remember sound was the first one. It was distinctly the first thing that came back in. And sight was nearly last, if not last. And then immediately the pain that I was in.
Wow.
So yeah, that was that experience in 2009. Mm. That was May 20, 2009, May 20th, 2010. I'm in India. I'm studying Hinduism in Tamil Nadu.
You went back, you had this thing from Africa, these parasites, and you were going to try a few different ones out in India, which we, who have been to India a lot, have experimented with ourselves.
Listen, on the anniversary, there was a Hanuman celebration, it wasn't Hanuman, it was a different goddess. I forget if it was a goddess.
Durga, Kali.
It wasn't Kali or Durga. Lakshmi. It was one that I did.
There's only 4 billion, so I could be here a long time.
Yeah, it wasn't one that I knew very well. Uh-huh. It wasn't one of the famous ones that have really translated into it. I was in Coimbatore at the time.
Oh, South India.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just outside of that, we were near Tanjore. And we stopped to see. So since you've been, do you know, it's called Nadi reading.
What? With the
Nadi readers.
Yeah. Like from on the palm leaves or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. On the Nadi leaves. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They sit there and they tell you absolutely everything that's written down, you know, and it's all targeted right on, right?
It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. Like I was like, this has to be a hoax. This has to come on. Yeah. Stop. Yeah. And then they're telling me stuff that I didn't tell anybody. I'm like, okay. And this was written when? 4,000 years ago? Okay. Yeah. As I'm leaving that reading, a man who reads scrolls said, be very careful driving. And I thought that was very strange because I had just said that to a friend of mine like 2 hours before that. And didn't think anything of it. And then May 20th, 2011, a year later to the day, I was sitting in a car
back here,
at a stoplight. Yeah, in Atlanta, minding my own business. And a lady hit me head on going 65 miles an hour and I went into a coma for 3 days. had a very similar experience. So there's that. And then 1 year later to the day, May 20th, 2012 was the first day I did ayahuasca. Hmm. And, you know, a long-term committed, very poignant relationship with that plant. Mm. So my May 20th is my spiritual birthday. So if I have any, it's almost like I can't be bashful about my own connection to the universe. Because I don't understand it, or others don't understand it, or others don't understand their own. Because the universe keeps waking me up and saying, hey, if you don't pay attention, we're going to make you. You know, 4 years in a row on the same day, something yeah. life-changing happening.
Oh, God's sake.
So that's how I know there's something else.
Yeah. Okay. Oh my God, this is quite a story. This is like, so, you know, wherever you were coming from past lifetime and you got all set to go in back into a body, you know, and through this incredible woman, they must have said, but you'll need a little bit of curriculum that's unusual. Most people don't have this kind of curriculum that just absolutely jettisons them into this kind of realization. That's really powerful. And then, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. No, I was going to say that, but I think I needed. I had several traumatic interventions, and I think that I needed those. I'm hard headed. If it wasn't that loud, I don't know if I would have listened. Mm. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I didn't listen at first. I sort of put my head back in the sand and had my PTSD and went about my life that way. But every single year, something else happened on the same day. That's just too.
That's crazy.
You can't ignore
that. It's too obvious. It's too way
too obvious. Yeah. Like you're crazy if you don't pay attention.
Exactly. Wow. Well, I didn't expect that.
I knew something happened.
I read up a little bit. I knew something happened. It was life changing, and it would involve near death experience. But the detailed description is spectacular, especially since, like I say, I've studied a bunch of this kind of stuff and work with Ram Dass around it. Jumping from here, though, I'm in Ojai, as listeners know. We're putting Love together. Ojai. Yeah. I know you're in New York, but whenever you're back, whenever it can travel again, maybe a couple of years, we'll see you. We'll meet up, eh?
That'd be great. Yeah.
And putting this headquarters together for Love Server Member Foundation. It turns out we're actually moving to a new place, and it's around the corner from the Krishnamurti Library. I don't know if you've been up there when you've come.
Yeah. I've not been there, but I love Krishnamurti.
Yeah, and I know that because of some posts. And one in particular, which I do know, and it's a spectacular quote from him. It is no measure of health, right, to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society. Yeah. Okay. That seems to be like a core thing of what's going on right now, especially with the white population, right? Feeling, and you know, I think also not just white population, but I mean, around me because of the consciousness work that we do with the podcast, with ramdass.org and everything else. There is some truth in that statement, I think.
There's a lot of truth, but
there's some specific truth about, I've been talking to, somebody else who's joining us. Do you know who Conda Mason is? She's, been an activist around social justice and also, into, Buddhist meditation and has worked at, in California at Spirit Rock with Jack Kornfield, who you may have heard. So I talked to her in the middle of what was going on. As I said, she's joining our podcast network. And she just said, well, there goes the veil, right? The veil is done and there's no, and it's the veil over the privilege of not knowing.
That's very well put.
Yeah.
I happen to agree with her. If you can't not agree with that. The thing is this. Consciousness itself has, I believe, consciousness itself has a evolutionary process. It has its own existence, right? Some people call it the collective consciousness. You can call it whatever you want. I call it, after you lose that human form, you remember. I call it remembering that we are one. And that collective consciousness went through its own traumatic intervention during the Reformation. And the Reformation brought forward two things that changed the world forever, in the last five centuries. The printing press and the industrialization of commerce. And what happened was, all of a sudden, Raghu, you were this learned scribe, and you were in Barcelona in 1475, and you would spit this esoteric knowledge to those that could understand it, and those that could read, and those that were trained in this, right? And 15 people or 20 people would know how smart you are. Or how much you knew, and you could share in the wealth of that knowledge or the wealth of that propaganda. And what did we have when we got the printing press? Well, that was their social media.
That was their
internet. Mm. All of a sudden you could write something down and Martin Luther could print out 5,000 copies and have those copies thrown around Europe, reposted, retweeted around Europe, right? And all of a sudden that changed religion forever. That changed women's role in society forever. That dethroned kings. It caused governments to have to change their positions on things. But what did we do? We didn't just use it for truth. We also used it for propaganda. And, the printing press was used to pass the propaganda, the myth that became the intersubjective myth that races actually existed at all. And that piece of propaganda made its way throughout Europe and became the prevailing wisdom that Africans were subhuman. And that Africa was Satan's last stronghold on the planet, the dark continent. Black didn't mean skin. Black meant black plague, black magic, black male, evil. White didn't mean skin because the Portuguese named it. They're tan, you know. they're not white. And so what they meant was purity. And so they subdivided people who considered themselves different ethnicities and then created these larger myths of race and differences within those races. And because that was the prevailing wisdom in Europe for 20, 30, 40 years, it just took on a life of its own. And we have built our economy on that myth. The industrialization of commerce was helped by that myth. Around 1600, people were feeling really bad about the slave trade, and they wanted to stop it in Europe. But that myth came out. You know, put that myth out. Two companies. One was called the Dutch East Indian Company. Mm-hmm. One was called the Dutch West Indian Company. Mm. They had sailors and their employee who were jumping ship and committing suicide, coming back with doing their own versions of mass shootings. And it's because they were feeling horrible about what they were doing, because the slave trade was child kidnapping. It was mostly children. It wasn't like they went and got 40-year-olds. You know, you wanted 15-year-olds. You work them longer, they take less food, and you can fit more in the ship. So a lot of people didn't feel good about that, including the stockholders, right? So they put out these pamphlets. Doctors signed off on it. The academia at the time signed off of it in Europe and said that the Africans were subhuman. And this became the prevailing wisdom. And by Hume's problem, of the philosophical question of David Hume, is that human beings feel, human beings are afraid of the unknown, and they're also afraid of being behind the prevailing wisdom. So when they see a new problem, they adjust it to whatever prevailing wisdom is there. And if the prevailing wisdom of doctors and academia at the time is that Africans are subhuman, they must be. They must be. Mm-hmm. So we should take them out of that subhuman environment, put them into a new place, allow them purpose, and give them our God. And let's make some money off of it too. And that's been the last 500 years. Mm-hmm. That's been the veil. That's the veil. The great lie of separation further separated in a depraved manner. That's what the Reformation did. So consciousness itself, I believe, would like to heal from that traumatic time in its own life, in its own evolutionary process. And it's giving us the opportunity to be compassionate about each other's stories.
Mm. I truly
believe that.
Isn't it amazing that COVID is here right at this time, around when, you know, this just blew up, and people have more time to absorb and to perhaps do a little bit of investigation and so on. I mean, that's a pretty amazing thing, actually.
I would say it's more than amazing. I would say that it's that's the universe and the consciousness itself saying, I am evolving. I'd like you guys to go home, be with your families, have a seat. Press pause. Have the ancient brain massaged, and you figure out what's important. Survival. Okay, so survival is important, right? If you go outside, you might die. There are people who are, afraid to go outside and afraid to live their lives in a normal way. And I'm safer inside. Okay, cool. That felt horrible for 2 months for people, or 3 months for people. But I think what happened was people's compassion centers got activated in their DNA. And they go, wait, my black brothers and sisters feel this way 365 days a year? They're in constant fight or flight? I don't like that. So we got a good chance to look at ourselves, look at our families, see what's important, look at our society with new awareness, with a slowed down awareness,
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And I think we got really compassionate. And I think that's a beautiful thing. Mm.
They call these times, the Chinese times of chaos and so on, dangerous opportunity. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great, I've been living with that for months and talking about it in every podcast because I think it's a great description. But
it really is, yeah.
Yeah. But then there's, the reality of being African American in this country mm-hmm. and the reality that white people, we do not. Cannot live in that skin. And one of the most profound things, and I know you mentioned it, I know you just did a podcast with Duncan and mentioned it, but it's worth the telling again. And that is the time where you get told the story.
Yeah. For anybody who wants to deny racial oppression, I challenge you to answer this question. Why does every single parent, every single Black parent in America, and moreover, many places in the world, have to tell their children at a certain point in time that the world hates you? And you can't make it lighter than that, because if you do, their life depends on it. Their life depends on knowing that the world hates them and that they have to take precautions because the world hates them. That danger could be death. That danger could be bullying. That danger could be assault. That danger could be getting skipped over for something. Whatever that danger is, there's someone who's going to try to knee-neck you. There's someone who's going to try to put their knee on your neck at some point in time. And sometimes that person's a citizen. Sometimes that person's a cop. Sometimes it's the people who are supposed to protect you. Sometimes it's your teacher. Moreover, the most dangerous place for a young Black child in America is in the mind of a white supremacist. And they don't wear pins. They don't identify themselves. They have all types of different jobs. So in preparation, you have to tell your Black child at some point in time the proper way to get arrested. Not to be harmed. Yeah, not to be harmed, not to be assaulted, not to be killed. Your job is to make it home. Your job is to make it to that cell that they're undoubtedly going to take you to one day. 100%, they will take you to a cell one day, without question. Every Black person I know has been put into a cell at some point in time. Whether you've been charged with the crime or not, they will come get you. They will figure it out. And you have to teach your child the proper way not to die at the hands of a police officer. You have to teach your child the proper way to speak to a police officer, to look them in the eye, but not for too long, to put your hands on top of your head or above your head, even when they just approach you, make sure your hands are not in your pockets. And if they start talking to you, it's a yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am. It is comply no matter what they say. No matter what they say to you, just comply. And make sure your hands are always someplace so they can see them. And I was 8 years old the first time I got arrested and roughed up by the police. It's child abuse, like what was done to me. Like I was grabbed, yanked from the bushes and had my head pushed against a wooden wall where it bruised me. And I had nightmares for years after that. And I got handcuffed and all kinds of stuff like that. For playing hide and go seek. And I was a small kid, I think my brother maybe had the talk. He was 10, I was 8. But, I was a small kid and I don't think I had the talk yet. And then my mom found out, the hard way that we have to have it, Yeah, it's, it's a devastating reality that people have to sit their children down several times throughout their childhood and let them know that, no, the entire world doesn't hate you, but you have to assume they do. There's going to be people who see you how you see yourself. But there's also going to be people who don't see an honor roll student. They see a menace. There's going to be people who don't see my son, my loving son. They're going to see a threat. There's going to be people who don't see a kid, a boy just being a boy. They're going to see a thug. And you have to look in the mirror and see through all those things that other people put on top of you. And it's just too heavy for an 8-year-old. It's just too heavy for a 10-year-old. Yeah. It's just not fair. Yeah. It's just not fair. So that's a real talk that every family, every Black family in America has had. I mean, mm-hmm. I guarantee you, like, there's not one that hasn't had that, right. Because it can save your life.
Right. Oh. A little bit more related, we're getting to the close of the podcast, but I know in our realm, which the realm of sharing consciousness, just simple to say it is that, the spiritual bypass or the up-leveling can happen pretty quickly. And there is something that you said, and I want to quote it in another thing that I saw. You said, if your definition of quote unquote woke prioritizes quote unquote positivity over social justice and human rights, you are asleep. And it's interesting because I just been working on,
sounds better when you say it. It sounds more profound when you, can you just like follow me around and say my quotes to people?
Yeah. Okay. That's a job I'd love. But I've been working on a podcast where we take excerpts of Ram Dass's talks and I introduce them, you know, and talk about it a little bit through my own lens and so on. And this one that I'm working on, actually, while I was waiting to talk to you, is around, it's called The Path of Awakening. So it's around getting woke, right? Mm-hmm. And at some point in it, what does he say? I mean, this is, so he says, you can't not do anything. There is no, even lying in your bed is doing something.
Doing right? something. Yeah. yeah.
So
yeah.
you can't. So the question is, what form will that, will the, you know, what form will it take? Any actions right. that you do in life, right? And right. he says, your incarnation is a vehicle for liberation. Okay. That's true. And wow. that's what your business is on earth. And, yes. and my own additional yes. thing there was, I haven't actually done the intro yet, so this is a rehearsal for me. Thank God.
Fantastic.
And that awesome. Liberation includes all humans' liberation, which is
all humans.
All humans' liberation, which is the all Tibetan humans. Bodhisattva vow. Right. I'm not going anywhere until everyone's liberated. And right. and that speaks to if your definition of woke, prioritizes just positivity, you know, in this very narrow range. And there's no action being taken around social justice and human rights, most especially mm-hmm. in our time. Then what's the use of it? You know, that's not part of awakening. And so I really vibe with that.
Thank you. I put it to a friend this way. Another way to say that the other day, I said it to a friend, I said, you know, Buddha said life is suffering. Mm. And I think we can all attest to that.
Yes.
Right? We can all attest to that. Mm. So, the purpose of a spiritual awakening is to construct your awareness beyond your comfort zone.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Right. And that has to be the antidote to suffering, right? To try to alleviate your own suffering is to expand your awareness beyond your comfort zone. Well, once your awareness expanded beyond that comfort zone, you start to see new truths.
Yeah.
And you start to realize that maybe the alleviation of suffering is not just for you. Maybe it's for all of us. Maybe exactly. You're supposed to use that spiritual alchemy that you've applied to your own life to the life of all.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm just not really sure why the spiritual community is still on the fence about this. Mm. In fact, I think the spiritual community should be leading this charge. This is a humanitarian thing. This is not a class thing or a gender thing or a race thing.
Yeah. Totally right on. Yeah. Totally right on. And by the way, everybody, I know you're working on a book, right?
I am.
When's that going to be?
It was coming along really nice during COVID, and then Armageddon came. Yeah, racial Armageddon came.
Yeah, yeah. You'll be at it for a while. Okay.
Yeah, but I hope to have it out by next year, and it is actually kind of about what's going on now. How do we create new agreements for the 21st century? Because we were born into these agreements that we're currently in.
Yeah.
And these agreements no longer serve us, obviously.
Yeah.
They never have, but they can't. Where does crippling oppression lead? Where does it go?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like, where does it go?
Yeah. Oh, well, I can't wait for that. And that'll be an opportunity to get together again, although I want to get together again way before that. And also, you know, you're a Renaissance man. I mean, you have a band. I mean, you perform and record, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I do music as well. It's part of the agreement, which is, I think, there's a lot of, when I was a kid until my NDE, I had a lot of clutter in my head.
Mm.
Mm. And storytelling and music has helped me sort of streamline that, you know, sometimes that's helping like sort of clean the processor out, right? Mm. and you have to make room for the software updates. Yeah, right.
Can we share the music through the podcast network, you know, I mean, the show notes and everything? Is there a link that you can send me?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I'll send you a link.
And then
sure.
We can share it with people. Yeah. That'd be great.
Sure.
As well. And of course, need you to say, what's the latest thing that you're doing movie wise that's coming up? Can you say?
Mortal Kombat. It's a reboot based on a video game.
Mm.
Most popular fight game of all time. So that's a pretty cool thing and really big movie. And I grew up playing that game. So it was a dream come true, but also something I visualized and manifested myself. And I strongly recommend that people, use visualization on a daily basis because it works.
Yeah.
It works. Mm. Yeah.
Oh,
and be specific as possible. It's really amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where are we going to be able to see this is the next question.
Well, the thing is, like, we had a release date prior to COVID, and that was January 15th, 2021. And I was going to be in theaters everywhere, obviously, but who knows if theaters will exist.
Okay. Is it coming out sooner than that, though? However it comes out?
No, I don't think it will be. I mean, most of the really big movies like Fast and Furious, Wonder Woman, they got pushed.
Uh huh.
So I would assume that we're going to get pushed too.
Yeah, they're hoping for the best. Yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah.
I mean, it'll turn out.
Yeah.
It'll turn out. I think the way the business is headed anyway is to release movies in theaters and at home at the same time.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Exactly. I think that's probably the next step.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they have to.
Yeah. So, hey, thanks so much, Mikhail.
Jeez, thank
it's
you.
So great meeting you and spending this time. Really wonderful. And again, everybody will have links and or just one wonderful source. Just, you know, befriend him on Instagram.
Thank you.
God Brooks. You. Okay. And and we're going to have you back as well. Maybe we'll do something. Oh, I know a fun thing. Why don't we do something, you, me, and Duncan together?
Oh, that would be great. We should do a round table.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm serious. We really should. That'd be great.
No, I'll talk to him about it, you know, and, And I also, you know, aside from Conda Mason, who you should check Conda out as well. There's a new book by a Sikh woman named Valerie Kaur, she's Kaur. Her book comes out tomorrow. I am recommending it across the board to everybody. Take a look at that. It is called See No Stranger. You will love this book. I know it.
Oh, is it? I think it's the one you told me about before.
Yeah.
Right? From a Sikh woman.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So check it out. And everybody out there, you'll be hearing more about her. And I did a podcast with her. It'll be out sometime soon. Meanwhile, again, thank you.
My brother, thank you so much. I really appreciate you holding space for my voice.
Thank you. We'll see you all next time on Mind Rolling on Be Here Now Network. Go to BeHereNowNetwork.com.